13 episode, Million Efforts. The preparation for the new conversation with the Keeper of Knowledge began the evening before. The Master asked the disciples to take a walk in the forest park near the Temple of Knowledge, emphasizing that they should do it after dusk. The disciples, trusting the sage wholeheartedly, ventured out into the evening without fear of potential dangers that might lurk in the darkness. On the contrary, they were filled with inspiration and anticipation of a valuable spiritual experience. What new discovery awaited them? Without exchanging words, the disciples walked in silence, immersed in their sensations. The lilac twilight smoothly transitioned into night, involving the forest park in a dark cloak. The moon, hidden behind a thick veil of clouds, provided almost no illumination, and the disciples found themselves fully immersed in darkness. They stopped in the middle of a well-trodden path, listening. At that moment, they keenly felt the harmony of the surrounding world and the tranquility of being in nature. The warm, quiet evening replaced the daytime heat, and the night animals replaced those from daytime. Now, the disciples were hearing the tiniest of sounds of the animal kingdom. A mouse rustled through the grass, invisible to the eye, but not escaping the attention of the disciples. Somewhere high above, concealed by the tree canopy, an owl preened its feathers. In the branches of bushes on either side of the path, night insects scampered with their tiny paws. Gradually, the disciples became convinced that the surrounding darkness held no danger for them and turned their attention inwards. Letting go of thoughts imposed by urban hustle and personal circumstances, they felt a surge of energy and heightened inner focus, akin to meditation. Each disciple experienced this in their own way. Some suddenly saw radiant streams of energy piercing the surrounding space. Others felt an extraordinary connection with nature elements, not seeing through sight, but sensing a merging, feeling themselves part of a vast world, an infinite universe, an eternal divine essence. Others lost their sense of spatial orientation, immersed in pure sensations, and in complete darkness, they could no longer distinguish between up and down, as if floating in the vast cosmos. The essential perception of themselves and the world around was so unexpected that it frightened the disciples, and they decided to return. On the way back, they shared their impressions, speculated on how to explain it all, and gradually, the fear subsided. The thoughts about the upcoming spiritual conversation with the Keeper of Knowledge calmed their minds, and they greeted the morning, full of vigor and strength. The sage awaited them on the stage in the large hall of the temple, and when the disciples appeared in the doorway, he greeted them with a warm smile. Enthusiasm filled everyone, anticipating the realization of new truths.
Master, yesterday, during the walk in the forest, we were in our essence, and as I understand it, in a state of inner silence.
The tall, dark-haired youth spoke first, catching the sage's gaze.
But we still had different impressions. Someone felt something frightening, someone lost their sense of up and down, and someone, on the contrary, felt God. How did this happen?
Fear was triggered by the fact that all of you are accustomed to perceiving the world differently, through the prism of personality programs.
The Keeper of Knowledge calmly replied with his deep voice.
If a person always lives in the city, in the light, then their perception is completely disconnected from the subtle level, as vision provides too many associations, awakens imagination, and takes the mind away from our essence. This is why meditation should not be neglected. Close your eyes, and personality already recedes to the background. When you can't navigate with sight, all other senses sharpen, and a sense of inner silence arises. In addition to the well-known channels of perception, hearing, smell, and touch, we have telepathy, intuition, and other extrasensory channels, including the feeling of God.
So, to feel God, is it necessary to turn off personality and inner dialogue?
The young man's voice sounded surprised.
Yes. Normal perception does not allow us to feel God,
the sage said.
Vision provides us with too much information, especially in an urban environment, cluttering our attention. Thus, we waste our energy on associations and inner dialogue, and there is not enough energy left for other sensations.
Master, I've heard about a yogic breathing technique called Murcha, in which all senses are closed to allow the development of supernormal abilities,
said the petite brown-eyed brunette.
It's also related to the subtle level, isn't it?
Exactly,
the Keeper of Knowledge replied with a smile.
Many of you were frightened by your sensations in the dark because your perception had never been refined before. But at the same time, you noticed that your well-being improved as your energy, if only briefly, stopped being spent on personality, associations, and imagination. Once you entered the forest, you adapted quickly because your attention was no longer distracted by associations. An inner dialogue was switched off, and as soon as you acknowledged the safety of the surroundings, your essential perception came to the forefront. That's how many of you felt God.
Upon hearing these words, many disciples felt a sense of embarrassment, but the sage knew they were on the right path because they hadn't become complacent with success. He sent energy of acceptance and boundless love to support them.
Master, I grew up with an alcoholic father, and yoga saved me from childhood.
A stocky, red-haired young man entered the conversation.
I heard my father yelling, throwing things, breaking something in the next room, but I still tried to keep focus on my spiritual practice. Am I correct in thinking that we should try to disconnect the inner dialogue even in other conditions? Concentration can leave us not only outdoors, but also at home, in silence.
You're thinking absolutely right, Martin,
the sage replied. Seeing how difficult it was for the young man to recall the sorrows of childhood, he sent him energy of all-encompassing love and support.
Even if the surrounding environment does not distract us, without willpower, a person can still drift into imagination. Efforts are needed, always and everywhere. Only with them will a person stay in reality. And if we exert our will and make efforts, we can maintain concentration and stop the inner dialogue in any conditions, even if they are not very favorable. Difficulties that we overcome with our willpower only develop it even more. Even if circumstances are against us and there is noise around, attempting to distract us, focusing on the task helps us overcome it. Everything will work out. The main thing is to apply more effort.
Martin looked at the master with gratitude for the detailed explanations and the energy of support he felt almost on a physical level. Meanwhile, a middle-aged woman in an unremarkable gray dress raised her hand.
Master, I want to be active and do a lot.
The woman began uncertainly and hesitated as if unsure whether to continue.
But I don't really like being in the spotlight. I prefer observing everything from the sidelines. Is that bad? Can I say that I need to work up an acceptance of being public?
Tara, there is a saying. If there are horns, we will knock them off. If there are no horns, we will attach them.
What does that mean?
If a person lacks certain qualities, they must cultivate them. If some qualities are in excess, they need to learn to control them. So if a person has a fear of public speaking, for example, they should, on the contrary, strive for being public and interacting. Strive to communicate more with people to work on what is lacking. If there is an abundance of something, then one must control oneself more, as there can be extremes there too.
At that moment, a man with a neat beard and wavy light hair, tied into a ponytail on the crown of his head, stepped forward.
Isn't it possible that a person who doesn't like being public just wants to be left alone, with no one making remarks and pointing out mistakes?
He asked the sage, looking meaningfully at Tara.
Can it be that a person just wants to hide and thinks, I'll quietly do something in my own corner?
Tara's cheeks turned red. She understood perfectly well that the man was referring to her. In that moment, she wanted to sink into the ground. She felt embarrassed and hurt by the realization that this disciple was right. The keeper of knowledge shifted his gaze from Tara to the disciple and back.
By pointing out mistakes, we provide a person with the greatest help,
he explained and looked at the disciple with such warmth and unconditional love that tears of purification glistened in her eyes.
Because if we don't point out a person's mistakes, they might never know about them. They could live to be 100 and still not know who they are. Here, they are constantly shown who they are, what they consist of, how they are structured. This is tremendous help in self-awareness. A person needs to value this greatly. Where else will they be pointed to their mistakes?
Tara met her eyes with the disciple who had pointed out her mistakes, and a bright smile touched her lips.
Gregory, thank you for mentioning this. I really didn't see or realize it. I was constantly trying to find excuses for myself, telling myself that I just don't like being public. But I didn't go further and couldn't figure out the root cause. But now I understand and will work on myself to get rid of this in me.
Tara shifted her gaze to the master.
Great one. Thank you for the support and for giving us the opportunity to see the flaws within ourselves and grow.
The keeper of knowledge responded to the disciple with a friendly look.
Tara, you're doing great. Acknowledging your mistakes is not easy, but it's an important step on the spiritual path.
The sage glanced at the present disciples and, addressing all of them, continued.
So if people encourage and point out mistakes, it's doubly beneficial because they provide energy and motivation for change. A person is too passive and cannot change on their own. And when push comes to shove, it means that a person will constantly receive energy and change under the influence of these pushes. It's important only to accept them correctly, perceive them correctly, and then changes will come. These are great blessings that can only be given to a person when they are pointed to their shortcomings. This is a divine blessing.
The disciples listened to the sage with great reverence and inspiration. It was evident that his words ignited them with inspiration, giving them strength and clarity in understanding how to correctly perceive their own mistakes and how to deal with the suffering sent by God. Meanwhile, a question arose from a very young disciple with a graceful neck and bright blue eyes on her thin face.
Master, am I correct in understanding that pride hinders a person from changing some negative quality? You say that we need to actively work, but a person resists and settles for what they have, unwilling to change anything. So, do we first need to see the imperfection in ourselves and then make efforts to change it?
Exactly, Violetta,
confirmed the sage.
Pride, inflated ego, and formed harmful habits hinder us. Let's say a person smokes and they need to make an effort to quit. Endure the desire for a few days, but no. Instead of making that effort, the person tells themselves, oh no, tomorrow, starting Monday, after the new year, they keep postponing and postponing, continuing to remain imperfect, boldly fight and eradicate habits, change them, because if we cling to these habits, everything remains the same. As soon as we change even one habit, a step forward is taken, fearlessly. Change harmful habits, and don't be afraid of change. Then everything will be fine.
The next question came from a disciple in a blue scarf tied back, emphasizing her deep gaze and focused open face.
I have a question on this topic, Master.
She began speaking with a thin but confident voice.
In divine chance, there is a line. To deserve suffering is a blessing. The more I develop spiritually, the more I notice that there are more awakenings from God in my life. Am I right in understanding that these awakenings are precisely something one has to deserve? For example, two people made the same mistake, but one received a verbal reprimand and the other a penalty. Does it mean that the one who got a penalty received a stronger awakening from God and he was luckier? Tell me, did I understand this correctly?
Yes, Irene, you understand correctly,
confirmed the sage.
Certainly, if God sends greater suffering, then a person spends more energy overcoming it, meaning they can change for the better more quickly.
So, does it always work this way?
Irene sought clarification.
The more energy pushes we receive, the faster we can change. What if a person doesn't want to understand and accept such pushes?
If a person starts resisting, justifying themselves, cleverly arguing and avoiding, trying to whitewash themselves, then that push doesn't have the necessary impact. The person essentially passes by it.
Then the push is wasted, isn't it?
Yes. It turns out the push was there, but the person didn't understand, so they didn't start changing. This means that several more such pushes must happen before the person moves even an inch and begins to see their mistakes.
But in this way, the person prolongs their suffering,
Irene emotionally remarked, and looked at the sage with incomprehension.
That's right, but the person doesn't understand that. If a person is on the path of development, they make an effort for every push. A person must make a million efforts, and for that, they must receive a million pushes. If they joyfully accept these pushes and immediately make the necessary efforts after each push, then they progress rapidly on the spiritual path. But another person doesn't understand this. They resist when the push comes. They don't make the necessary efforts immediately after, so they end up stretching their suffering for an indefinite time.
Great one. If a person starts resisting, does it mean that later, to correct their mistakes, they will need more effort?
Martin asked, joining the conversation again.
Yes,
confirmed the sage, acknowledging the disciple's intuition.
The more they resist, the more effort they will need later. They will have to give a billion pushes now to make the necessary efforts. Not just a million efforts, but a whole billion. Why? Because they started resisting, and now they must receive 1,000 times more pushes. Why does a person prolong their suffering? Why did they do that? Because they thought that they would maintain their passive state. If a person resists, argues, they preserve their negative state and live in that negativity.
Master, is it possible that a person outwardly agrees with their mistakes, but internally has not accepted it?
Irene spoke again, preparing to ask a new question.
In this case, will development also not progress?
If a person outwardly says yes, but internally begins to be clever maneuver, then everything goes in vain. The person will have to go through more suffering before they achieve liberation. So be glad that your mistakes were pointed out, and you saw who you really are. You were given a push, and you immediately started changing and flew faster towards enlightenment. Be happy about this, and actively monitor these pushes, immediately starting the work of exposing your flaws.
Beloved Master, am I correct in understanding that we make small efforts when we experience suffering at the level of the false personality?
Asked Violetta, meeting the sage's gaze.
And if we don't make these small efforts, will we face more severe trials when not only the false personality suffers, but also the body and our essence?
Effort for the false personality is the necessity to overcome oneself, to see the zombie program within, to work on some personal shortcomings, overcome something small within, attain a sublime state, achieve a state of understanding, openness, enlightenment, unfold superhuman abilities within. All these are small efforts, but they need to be done daily and consistently. Then step by step, we will move upward towards God.
Great one. What if something goes wrong?
Inquired Violetta, attempting to delve deeper into the topic.
And if, say, you start to worry intensely, essentially, the suffering begins to manifest in the external world, expanding. In this situation, should we immediately seek advice from the master, from the sages, or is it acceptable to listen to the voice of society, upbringing? If we follow society, then things will go very badly, and the task won't be done properly. Am I understanding this correctly?
Of course. Suffering itself shows a person that something is wrong. First and foremost, it's necessary to change one's thinking, distorted perception of the situation, as suffering often arises from that. How to change? You need to ask the master, the sage, about it. You can turn to me directly, and I will explain what is happening. Then a person will start to change and become a superhuman. Gradually, through effort, they will free themselves from the society-imposed zombie program, and they will feel good.
When the Keeper of Knowledge finished his explanations, a new question came from a tall, statuesque female student with very short hair, sun-bleached to a light color.
Great one. Please help.
She asked, looking hopefully into the sage's eyes.
I still can't disidentify, even with a small pain in my body, and it gives a limit of energy to me.
The woman paused to choose the most suitable words and express her thoughts more clearly.
If I feel even a very slight pain and discomfort, I understand that my energy level sharply decreases, and I can't do anything. But you already said that this energy level can be increased with emotions. You know, sometimes I even want to hit myself so that I realize that healing is possible, that bruises fade, and nothing terrible will happen. Why do I have such an attitude towards pain on all levels? That pain is bad.
Helen, if a person is in a weak yin state, if they are too relaxed, then a touch of their finger, and they already scream in pain. Because in the yin state, a person becomes more sensitive to everything. Even something small happens, some unpleasantness, and they tragically experience it, start tormenting themselves. If a person is in the active yang state, then they don't care. Even if they are punched in the face, they won't notice it and will continue to act rapidly because they are in a collected, active yang state and their sensitivity changes. The person stops being delicate. They no longer feel weak influences. They don't care about them because they are in a strong state no matter what happens to them.
So, I incorrectly perceive pain because I'm in the yielding yin state?
The woman asked.
Exactly,
nodded the sage.
You need to be in a collected state, in a rigid active yang state. You must not relax and constantly make efforts. Then everything will be fine. You won't feel pain, injections, jabs. A person won't sharply feel all this and tragically experience it. They will perceive it all normally and react adequately. Therefore, you need to get out of the senseless state where any small touch seems like the end of the world.
Great one! I can't get over the thought of inscriptions in heaven, which proclaimed, "This century is the last for this civilization."
A tall blonde with piercing green eyes joined the conversation.
And I've also heard the opinion that the future, on the contrary, has many options, and nothing definite can be said. I'm trying to connect this, and it seems to me that everything comes down to the fact that, in any case, with any development scenario, our civilization has only one century left, and the countdown started back in the year 2000. But maybe everything will be fine.
The girl looked at the keeper with hope.
If the future is known in advance, maybe it won't happen. After all, there is information about the upcoming Satya Yuga, the day of Svarog, and so on. I want to hope for the best outcome.
Everything happening in this century leads humanity to its demise, Sarah.
The sage shook his head with regret.
People have completely gone mad. They're about to start a nuclear war. What new era can we think about now? And even without that, the whole planet is suffocating from garbage because there are too many people. And no one thinks. They keep giving birth, sitting on a garbage pile because they were indoctrinated that way. They live on each other's heads and go crazy. When I was little, buying water seemed ridiculous. It was already suitable for drinking. People seem to have learned to use water bodies wisely, to always have clean water at hand. But then everything rolled back. Progress was lost. Even air will soon have to be bought in cylinders, like they buy water in bottles now. So there is no other way but to reduce the Earth's population. Humanity is digging its own grave in filth. Any option leads to mass destruction. Scientists have long ago found out that if any species of animals in nature multiplies rapidly, some epidemic or simply starvation occurs, and this sharply reduces their numbers. That's how nature maintains balance and saves itself. But scientists don't talk about the fact that a rational person should also reproduce sensibly. People think they've hidden from nature behind the walls of megacities, that they are safe, but air from cylinders and water from bottles will also run out one day.
Upon hearing these words, many disciples sighed heavily and lowered their eyes. Some were now reliving the impressions of the human ugliness they had witnessed with their own eyes, while others envisioned the joyless events of humanity's demise, inspired by fiction. At that moment, Sarah remembered a historical painting depicting the destruction of an ancient city, the last day of Pompeii. Like an invisible observer, she saw on the inner screen of her memory the terrified citizens going mad with fear, the walls of buildings collapsing, the planet shaking off the people who tormented it. After shaking off those dreadful memories a few seconds later, the girl raised her eyes again to the keeper to ask a new question.
Master, you told us that each planet has its own soul, and Earth as well. Am I correct in understanding that Earth currently grants humanity freedom of action, and it has its own plans for the future? Is all this pollution connected to the inner work of the Earth?
Yes, everything is interconnected,
nodded the Keeper of Knowledge.
In the Mahabharata, it is written about the war between the Pandavas and the Kauravas. The Earth itself requested this war from the gods. Even then, too many people were trampling on it, and our planet asked to reduce their numbers. So the gods allowed the war between the Pandavas and the Kauravas. After that, the population of the Earth decreased, and it sighed with relief. Other planets are also living beings, and they engage in some kind of game among themselves. Planets allow civilizations to arise and develop, but inevitably, their decay and destruction follow. Like all living things, civilizations have their lifespan determined by the planets. In one aspect, a civilization is created, and in another, it is destroyed.
The sage finished his explanations and surveyed the disciples with a keen gaze. Seeing how much the thought of the imminent demise of earthly civilization oppressed them, the Keeper of Knowledge once again sent them a bright energy, full of love and support. The gathering in the hall lifted their spirits, reminding themselves that they aspire to God, not to the endless repetitions of earthly life.
Beloved Master, since all living things are finite anyway, would it be beneficial to know the date of one's death?
Martin asked again.
After all, ignorance may breed recklessness, and with it, laziness that can turn into degradation.
Gods know better what we truly need,
the sage confidently replied.
Since we do not know, it means it is necessary, and the experience of not knowing is essential. In this world, a person lives in a state of ignorance, which allows them to dream, experience, hope, and attempt to predict something. All of this happens because the future is unknown to us, and this is also a necessary experience, even if it includes sorrows, unfulfilled plans, and vain hopes. On a subtle level, there are no mental fluctuations. Everyone knows everything. Who will incarnate and when, what each person will be doing, and when they will return. And that's why they live peacefully there. But in the physical world, there is God's play, and ignorance is one of its rules. Physical experience is impossible without ignorance. Feelings of hope, faith, and the associated mental torments cannot be known in any other way. So ignorance leads to new knowledge, and when a person, having cast off the life of a worm, begins to contemplate being God, when they start meditating, it becomes possible to reach a higher level of existence. Having gained the experience of life on the physical level, return to the subtle level, where everything that was before is known, and everything that will come after is known.
Master, I'm thinking now that the deadline at work is also similar to knowing one's death, and it really dulls many people.
The petite brunette returned to the conversation.
Many postpone everything to the last day, even if the work is not burdensome. And a person, not knowing the date of their death, behaves as if there is a whole century until the deadline. Everything later, later, later. It turns out there's some foolish idea settled in a person's head, like an imaginary deadline. It seems to a person that they will live forever, that their deadline is not soon, so they can do nothing for now. Is there really no chance for them to get rid of such wrong perception? Maybe God gives some signs or hints that, with the right efforts, can be understood.
A person sets themselves up for laziness, for idleness. It's their comfort zone.
The Keeper of Knowledge said, shaking his head.
That's why they postpone their efforts. They study for exams on the last day, delay work, so that everything accumulates and leads to another emergency. Laziness governs a person, and then, on that very last day, the fear of failing the exam or being left without a salary comes, and under that fear, a person begins to make efforts. It's all because of laziness, with which a person has identified. It needs to be fought, not letting it manifest, not striving for a state of comfort and tranquility. All these are enemies that will drag a person to the bottom, make them degrade. Without daily efforts, a person constantly degrades, and with age, it becomes more and more evident. Have you noticed how easily children absorb everything new? But for the elderly, on the contrary, the new comes with difficulty. It would seem that a person has gained wisdom, knows what is important and necessary, but no, in reality, they have simply degraded every day of their life. A person degrades when they indulge in laziness, when they postpone everything for later. It turns out that later is already too late. A person in a feeble body can no longer do anything with themselves. They no longer have the strength to develop. That's how death overtakes a person even before their soul leaves the body. Therefore, one must remember every day that allowing oneself to degrade, to rise even to the previous level, becomes increasingly difficult and often impossible. Don't wait for anything. Efforts must be made here and now. All this laziness, tranquility, comfort must be rejected, not allowing them to take over one's mind and body. And then everything will work out.
Master, I feel a bit awkward asking.
A very young, dark-haired girl with serious gray eyes joined the conversation.
You've been sharing your knowledge for a long time, and many of your disciples have been with you for years. But how is it possible that not everyone evolves? I wonder how one can degrade while being close to you, but such cases exist, and on the contrary, there are those who, seemingly fools, came out of curiosity or boredom, but then changed beyond recognition and became very close to you. I initially thought maybe the planets intervened, but it turns out they have nothing to do with it. It's the person who chooses their own path. Did I understand correctly?
Exactly, Mary.
The sage warmly smiled at her.
One disciple, despite making initial progress, relaxed, became lazy, postponed everything for later, and didn't notice how he started rolling downhill. On the other hand, another disciple, though initially at the bottom, tried to develop every day, step by step. This is how people evolve, and the whole secret lies in daily efforts. If a person allows themselves to relax, they will begin to lag behind. An active person, on the other hand, will continue to move forward. There may be better people around you, but without efforts on your part, you will still fall behind them. Passivity is our biggest enemy, and it must be constantly fought by becoming more and more active.
Dear Master, I have another question.
Mary continued her questioning.
I can't shake off the good girl complex, the one who trembles for a positive image in society. It greatly hinders me in maintaining inner purity for God. It turns out I have to lie. I don't want to tell the truth about my motives because they won't understand and will condemn me. So I have to pretend to be right. And because of this, it feels nasty inside. How can I free myself from this inner lie and still play the necessary roles for the egregore?
You should play the necessary roles with people in society when you have to interact with those who are quick to judge.
Explained the Keeper of Knowledge.
But in the spiritual family, there must always be sincerity. The more sincere a person is, the faster they will spiritually grow. Surrounding people will perceive such sincerity as an example to follow. Despite the constant lies in society, people deep down hate it themselves, so they will appreciate a sincere person who does not lie, deceive, and is not afraid to expose themselves. True development begins with sincerity, with a clear view of one's own and others' imperfections. And the good girl exists only for reward, like a piece of candy. And besides that candy, she won't achieve anything.
Master, I also don't dare to tell the truth.
The red-haired man returned to the conversation.
If I admit my mistakes, for example, at work, the management may stop giving me responsible tasks, lower their assessment. In general, the whole work in a team often relies on lies and shifting blame.
Only hopelessly foolish people value lies and evasion.
The sage shook his head.
Moreover, Alex, restrictions on a person are for their own good, as they give them the opportunity to grow. Permissiveness and arbitrary behavior dull a person. We talked about this today. A person must acknowledge their mistakes, otherwise they cannot develop. God sees a sincere person and does not send them special restrictions, just as any normal people would. Those who lie, steal, and do mean things must be strictly restricted.
Maybe restrictions are a kind of test?
Alex suggested, musingly furrowing his brow and shifting his thick, dark eyebrows.
As a substitute for will, to find out how a person will react. Someone may welcome restrictions and go towards them, while someone, on the contrary, hides from them. Perhaps it's some kind of trial.
Yes, exactly,
the sage praised his disciple.
One should joyfully welcome restrictions, seeing in them a way of awakening. Even a banal penalty is the same suffering that God sends us to awaken, to make us make efforts and develop. It is essential to remind oneself that this is the path of development, and God Himself gives us the strength and energy to change. And what would happen if there were no restrictions? A person would have nothing to lean on in their path of development, and they would get stuck in the mud.
Master, then what determines a person's search for their path? Is it only a desire to make their life easier?
Sarah asked again, returning to the conversation.
And can people who live an ordinary social life develop at all? Is there any option for them?
Many people seek an easy path,
the sage replied with irony in his voice.
But in reality, they chase illusions of their own imagination. Many even think they are moving towards something sublime. But in reality, they go nowhere. Restrictions, on the other hand, bring with them the energy for development that God gives. People who live an ordinary life and don't even think about finding their own path develop differently. Disappointments await them. For example, a person creates a family, and after a few years, everything falls apart. Constant reproaches and misunderstandings. No, there's no happiness in the family. He raises children. Maybe happiness will come from them. But no, the son turns out to be a scoundrel. And so gradually, people become disappointed in everything. Their illusions crumble, revealing the real world to their gaze. The more realistically a person begins to see life, the more realistically they see themselves. It's already significant development.
And how should we correctly perceive criticism and praise?
Mary asked a new question.
I'm afraid that the good girl in me will turn on again from some approval.
We must always observe ourselves,
replied the master.
Both when praised and when criticized. Watch your thoughts. They are praising my biorobot. The process has already begun, and from the awareness of its goodness, the pleasure center is tingling. But if you perceive praise differently, calmly, then the pleasure center won't be disturbed. Similarly, when we are criticized, a calm perception leads to mindfulness. To be in a mindful state, we must overcome the pattern of criticism is bad, praise is good. Stop reacting like a robot with no perception of its own. Therefore, it is always necessary to maintain composure. This way, we will remain in a mindful state and be able to control ourselves.
Beloved Master, what should we do with everyday rules?
Asked the tall, red-haired girl with thoughtful green eyes.
Things like personal documents, such as a passport, are not connected to the soul, but household rules must also be followed, just like spiritual practice. The leader is the one who follows all the rules, but how can I love these rules?
Rules are created so that a person acts as if they are already conscious,
explained the sage.
If a person was conscious, they would know where their passport is and would always carry it. This way, a person shows vigilance, as they understand that the passport is often needed. A careless person, on the other hand, is prone to laziness and hopes for luck. Instead of awareness, they exhibit negligence. Therefore, something as simple as keeping the passport in a bag makes a person more conscious. And if they continue to follow other rules as if they are conscious, they will become so. We should appreciate such rules because they form the foundation for our development. Remind yourself, I carry my documents with me to be ready for possible difficulties. I am vigilant and cautious. I don't want to be in a careless and foolish state like a fool who didn't look where they were going and fell into a pit.
Does it mean that rules are a kind of training tool for development?
Smiling at her guest, the girl asked a new question.
Exactly, Lilia,
the master replied to her.
A training tool creates conditions, directs development, and does not allow relaxation. If a person forgets about the rules and relaxes, they will only decay. They found where it is easier to live and perished there. I recently told you that selling an apartment leads a person to their demise. The apartment created frames for a person, stimulating them to work to maintain housing. When they sold it, they went downhill, started drinking incessantly, and died. A person without rules can only degrade. It is also essential to sincerely observe them. No trickery, no lying, no cheating. Then these rules will become like training tools that help you grow and develop.
Master, do I understand correctly that we need to come to an understanding of the essence of each rule?
The tall, dark-haired youth joined the conversation. Yes, you understand correctly, Ruslan, praised the keeper of knowledge.
Why do we not exchange contacts to avoid taking on another person's karma? In a relaxed state, a person cannot control communication. They can say and advise too much. causing harm to the interlocutor. Each rule has its meaning that needs to be understood. Let's return to the analogy of the gym. A person who has not studied and understood the rules will try to trick, like a slacker who skips workouts in the gym. When the trainer passes by, they start pretending to make an effort, and when there's no trainer around, they collapse on the equipment and lie there. Why did they come to the gym then? They only made things worse for themselves. Right in front of them are tools for development, but they lie there like a worm in the mud.
Master, what are examples of rule adherence in other egregores?
Mary returned to the conversation. It was evident that gratitude overwhelmed the girl towards the keeper of knowledge, for freeing her from the imposed image of the good girl. Now, a gentle smile illuminated her face, yet her gaze remained pensive and attentive.
For example, in monasticism, self-control is highly developed,
the sage spoke, answering Mary's question.
From early morning, monks practice obedience and prayer. They regularly fast and always control their thoughts and actions to avoid temptation and sin. Thoughts are crucial. Insane people are insane because they cannot control their thoughts in their heads. There is no special difference between a madman and a person lacking self-control. A madman will openly throw himself at people, while a seemingly healthy person, without self-control, may kill his own mother for money. That's what uncontrolled thoughts lead to. One leads in one direction, another in another, and the third led to a crooked path. But if a person has a lot of self-control and control over their thoughts, they can change themselves, grow, and self-improve. Therefore, control is the most crucial thing. It allows a person to do rational things, develop, and become a superhuman. Without it, they're just a madman.
Master, could you please explain why we chant the egregore's mantra, or Aum, before each practice? What significance does it carry?
Martin inquired.
I notice that many in the group don't understand why it's necessary, and this may lead to a loss of mindfulness.
The mantra, or prayer, is needed to connect with the egregore, with the higher powers. Alone, a person can only do one thing, lose their mind,
spoke the keeper of knowledge.
But when we connect to the egregore, we become conductors for the higher powers. They begin to guide us, direct us, provide help and energy. Through them, enlightenment and awareness come to us. That's why we chant the mantra before practice. Depending on the god, you chant the mantra too. That's the connection you establish. And of course, the right attitude is important. You should sing sincerely, from the heart. If you mechanically chant the mantra, without thinking, nothing will happen.
Why then did we used to say the phrase, I swear to serve the egregore in this ritual, before practice?
Lilia asked a new question.
We did that precisely, so that everyone would understand why we perform this ritual,
explained the master.
To avoid unconscious actions. There will be no result from mechanical actions like hand here, hand there. But if a person understands that they are serving God, if they experience strong emotions, they can transform themselves with divine energy and bring something divine into this world. Then their actions become not mechanical actions of a robot, but a true ritual that they perform consciously, correctly, emotionally, with the soul.
Beloved Master, can I practice breath concentration in Ajna during the day and then send energy to Sahasrara?
Martin asked again.
I practice only before bedtime, and after one or two breaths, I fall asleep. Can concentration in Ajna during the day help me have vivid dreams at night?
Of course it will help.
replied the Keeper of Knowledge.
You should do everything during the day. Don't postpone the breathing practice. By evening, there might be a different state. Accumulated fatigue, and just a couple of breaths might be enough effort. Starting from the early morning, throughout the day, focus on Ajna. This makes our state more collected, vivid, active, and our mind starts to work better, perceiving everything more clearly. Then the dreams will be more vivid. It's also good to concentrate before bedtime and not lying in bed, but sitting or even standing. Feel a lump in Ajna, pressure, expansion, almost to the point of pain. Once you feel this, then you can go to sleep.
Master, how should we explore various religious teachings? Many of them, at least at first glance, seem to be aimed only at developing specific qualities in the followers.
Ruslan returned to the conversation.
Several years ago, I traveled a lot in search of enlightenment, but I found nothing for myself, only realized that I was treading the same mud as ordinary tourists. Here's a statue of Buddha, and here are noisy visitors throwing garbage. So I returned home with nothing, understanding only that enlightenment cannot be achieved without a true master.
You understood it all correctly,
said the Keeper of Knowledge, warmly smiling at his disciple, who, in his desire to comprehend the truth, did not allow himself to be lazy and sit still.
It happened that religions became dead. As long as an awakened master is alive, his teaching is alive. And with his departure, the religion begins to die. Gradually, his closest disciples leave life, leaving only distant followers who do not fully understand the essence of the teaching. Such a dead religion is sustained only by rituals. There is no need for special intelligence to repeat them. Everything is reproduced mechanically and cannot awaken a person because the essence of the teaching can only be preserved in living people who have grasped it. Awakened people will be gone and the teaching will disappear, leaving only a dead ritual and dogma. That's why religion's followers, like parrots, mindlessly repeat postulates, not understanding what it is about and what the essence is.
Master, since religions don't talk about deep things, does that mean only the facade is visible, the populist part for the masses?
Now Lily asked the question.
Even we don't talk to new disciples about self-control, discipline, and that discomfort is the best friend. Instead, we talk about femininity, success, relationships, etc. With religions, it's exactly the same. For ordinary churchgoers, they only show the facade, not suggesting immediately to go to the monastery and reject worldly life.
Yes, ordinary people are told only about something superficial,
confirmed the sage.
But if you look at the monks, the first thing that catches the eye is their self-control, without which obedience and further development are impossible. Even love for others and compassion are impossible without self-control. Right now, a person may feel compassion for someone else's failure, but after a minute, they hear something unpleasant, and all the compassion disappears, giving way to anger. Therefore, it is impossible to love people without self-control. You said a kind word and received love in return. But if you said something unpleasant, hatred replaced it. A person does not control the processes of love and hatred within themselves. They react like a robot to the commands given to them. Learning to love and feel compassion is only possible through self-control. Someone offended you, and you still cultivate a loving attitude towards them. Against everything happening within oneself, but maintain a positive attitude. Nothing is possible without control. Neither love nor compassion nor other conscious actions. Therefore, the more control and awareness we have, the more opportunities we have to do something, to change something.
Master, what should we do with our thoughts?
Sarah asked a new question.
People are different. Some feel more while others are intellectuals. Is it harder to stop thoughts if there are many of them? Do we need to cleanse the mental level to have the ability to stop thoughts? And how does the ability to stop thoughts work?
Everything is correct. People are different.
Confirmed the keeper of knowledge, acknowledging his disciples' intuition.
If a person is of the motor type, spending more time in the physical body, with less developed intellect, it is easier for them to stop thoughts. The physical body feels more, lives through actions and movements. Thoughts are not as important to them, making it easier to stop them. On the other hand, for someone concentrated on the mind, it's more challenging because they don't feel their body. Such a person should start by first sensing their body to divert attention from the mind and gain the ability to stop thoughts. But the most crucial thing is to make efforts. No one taught a person to stop thoughts, so they don't know it's possible. Not even in childhood, when everything is easily learned. For an adult, it becomes more challenging. However, everything seems complicated until we start trying. A flip, for example, is very challenging if you've never done it. But when a person starts attempting it, time after time, eventually, it begins to work. Similarly, with the mind, you need to make more attempts. If a million efforts are needed, then that's what you should do. Start with 1,000 attempts a day, and then your mind will be more and more under your control. Continue the attempts, and soon your mind will fully obey you. If you don't make the effort, the mind will remain in chaos. So take these 1,000 attempts as a rule. If you make 1,000 attempts, the day will not be in vain, and you will be closer to stopping your thoughts.
Master, does it mean that people indeed have a predisposition for mental or physical activity?
Alex asked a new question.
For example, some like to exercise physically, but find it hard to develop intellectually. Others, on the contrary, find it difficult to develop their bodies, but always keep their minds occupied.
Yes, everyone has predispositions,
nodded the sage.
A person of a sports type enjoys exercises and runs, while a mentally oriented person is always engaged in calculation and planning. Such processes happen mechanically in people, without requiring willpower. But we must do what is not familiar, what does not cause a mechanical reaction and a positive response. These activities, activating our emotional center, provide an opportunity for development. By doing only what we are predisposed to, we cannot evolve. Therefore, through our own efforts of will, we must fill everything with meaning, spirituality, and emotions. For example, a person tells themselves, "There is a practice that will help me spiritually develop, prevent degradation. I don't want to crawl like a worm in the mud. I want to become an angel and approach God." Such an attitude creates positive emotions, activates us, and the practice takes place consciously. We can't sit and wait for something inside us to emerge and prompt us to take actions. Allowing ourselves to be subjected to stereotypes, patterns, and other processes within us hinders us and ultimately leads to degradation.
Master, what should I do if someone near me is irritated? I'm thinking, maybe I should just wait until their negativity passes. And everything will be fine.
Lilia asked hesitantly. Her voice expressed inner conflict between the desire to help others and uncertainty about the righteousness of her actions.
What if trying to teach them will only intensify their irritation?
However a person reacts, they will eventually switch, as sooner or later they will tire of being irritated and psychotic themselves, but it won't change anything in their life. They will still remain a robot,
the keeper of knowledge began to explain.
Our task is to awaken them so that they stop doing everything automatically. We should point out to this person, "Do you feel irritation?" Well, take a look at how it arises. Observe what thoughts precede it. Also observe your body. Notice the posture it takes in a fit of rage. You don't lie down on the floor to be irritated. On the contrary, you jump up and clench your fists. Observe yourself. Identify all manifestations of irritation in yourself and examine them. Then you will see that it's just your irritated biobot. You're only a witness in this matter, so you should disidentify from the biobot. Start doing something about this chaos. Exaggerate your quality and try to cope with it. By speaking such words, we can genuinely help a person stop being a biorobot. If we wait for them to tire of anger or redirect their attention, they may remain foolish. Our task is to assist people in changing. Even if they get angry at us instead, attempting to improve them will still work in our favor, because in trying to change others, we transform ourselves as well.
Beloved Master, how can we create suitable conditions for development within a collective?
Alex asked a new question.
I understand that there should be both love and strictness. How can we support the angelic part of a person without indulging, but pointing out their mistakes while avoiding negativity?
We've already talked about mistakes right at the beginning of our conversation. Here, it's crucial for the other person to understand why you're pointing out their mistakes,
explained the sage.
For this, we must be conscious, and our words should not be dictated by the irritation of the biobot. By consciously pointing out the wrong actions of your colleague, you develop yourself and help them develop. If you close your eyes to other people's mistakes or simply dismiss the negativity, it's a path to mutual degradation.
I've been thinking that we often ignore other people's negativity and allow it to spread to others,
Sarah said thoughtfully.
There was a disciple in our school who didn't like it, and she instilled this dislike in others. Then an aspect came, and her power saw all of this, not allowing her to attend classes. I already understood that her spiritual growth would be determined by the negative aspect, whether she stays in the school or leaves.
It's nothing but indifferent attitude towards each other.
The master shook his head.
People don't want to make an effort to explain something to each other. It's not enough to say a few words. You have to explain to the person what they are doing wrong, pay attention to them, and show that your remark is not meant to upset them, but on the contrary, to care for them. It's easier to let people continue displaying negative emotions and degrading. But in such cases, this degradation will also affect those who treat others indifferently. If each of us makes an effort, it will not only help another person and ourselves, but over time, it will also change others around us. Indifferent attitudes, on the contrary, breed degradation. As we talked about at the beginning of our conversation, the reckless multiplication and destruction of nature are two vivid examples of indifference. Some drag humanity to the abyss, while others see it and indulge in apathy. That's why there should be no indifferent attitude towards each other. Effort should be made, and the desire to help should be realized. In this way, development will be mutual. Eventually, development will turn a person into an angel. And does an angel live like a worm in a comfortable burrow, not helping anyone? No, good deeds are inseparable from their essence.
Beloved Master, I tend to make such a mistake,
sighed Mary.
Perhaps the good girl in me prevents me from daring to point out someone's mistake. I don't touch them. Let them not touch me. That's how indifference and comfort want to ruin me. Thoughts that suffering is inevitable, no matter how many good deeds I do, never leave me. Sometimes I even want to avoid contact with people altogether because I strive for spiritual development and feel that I am better than them.
Don't blame yourself, Mary. Recognizing your mistakes is already a significant achievement,
the sage replied, sending the girl energy of support and acceptance along with words of approval.
Seeing suffering but not realizing the need to make an effort is a form of ignorance. Allowing yourself to suffer just because suffering will happen anyway means leading a useless animal existence. You can swim in suffering like a worm in the mud. Effort must be made anyway. God Himself will create situations for me through which I can develop. I can help other people and myself. So why should I drag and be lazy? It's better to do everything right away. There's no need to prolong suffering and the worm's life. This is what you should think.
Does that mean a person needs exactly that million efforts to become an angel?
Asked Mary. The keeper of knowledge approvingly looked at his disciple.
Do you remember when I told you about one of my disciples who listened attentively but did nothing, relaxed, and accepted suffering? I told him that he had to overcome the societal program, that efforts were necessary because only through them would he free himself from suffering and discover angelic life. But no, suffering turned out to be closer, and it happened that he suffered first in Afghanistan, then in the family for which he traded in the market in 40-degree frost, and then he was left alone because sick father was no longer needed by his children. Now he could lead a yoga section, continue to develop and improve, help others in this. Everything would have been good for him, but by prolonging suffering, he postponed development to the next life. I'm going some stupid way, he admitted to me once. That's how laziness and unwillingness to make that very million efforts made a person suffer in vain throughout their life. In the next life, the same million efforts await him, and if he still will be lazy, his sad story will repeat. But if he takes hold of himself and makes all the efforts, he will not only help others but also reach a higher level of existence. Only through a million efforts can one become an angel and enjoy life in heaven.
The end of the Keeper of Knowledge's speech was met with applause from the disciples. Bright smiles filled their faces, full of gratitude. Their time in the aura of the Master charged them with motivation, which was now unwavering. Before them lay a long road of thousands and thousands of attempts, but now they stood firmly on it, ready to go as far as needed for their minds to start serving them, not remaining just another shackle in the physical world.
Do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website www.amazon1.org. Share this book and spread the great knowledge. Then people's lives will change for the better, and you will accumulate good karma and be able to help all your loved ones.